Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:35, and that is Pacific Standard Time. And today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. And this has been another incredibly eventful week. And you'll definitely have seen the headlines that it's the worst start to a year ever. So then you have to look at exactly what it is that's happening. And, this is the long-term audio, so it's probably a good time to start putting some of this into context, because there really are so many moving parts to what's going on right now that it's probably worth just taking the time to address them individually and as a whole, and come up with a bit of an answer as to just where are we in all of this. And, first off, let's just stick with the crowd and exactly where we are with in terms of the price action. And I remember when I first started working with David and going to the chart seminar, and that was back in 2002 2003, and I found it quite difficult to identify type 2 tops. And yet right now we're presented with rather a lot of them, and that's characterized by a failed upside break that's followed by a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. And we saw a lot of those back in August. And generally speaking, once that happens, and this is something that we talk about in the chart seminar at fair length, is that once you get that massive reaction, it's the proverbial bolt from the blue. And then what do you get after that? Well, because it's so surprising, people start to look around and they say, well, what's really changed? And, probably not a great deal would have happened in terms of the fundamentals of companies. And that was no different on this occasion, because, within 2 or 3 days, you were getting news that it was all because of a failure at BNY Mellon's ETF pricing model, and that this was all going to blow over, and that it was nothing more than some volatility. And that would be a mistake to think that is really all that it was going to be, because the effect of a massive reaction against the prevailing trend is that it triggers stops. And it triggers stops not just for traders, but for investors. And for those investors, then, they might have been building up a position for a period of time, and possibly even years, and they will have been taken out of the position. And no one ever likes getting stopped out of anything, because we don't want the stop to get triggered. We want the prices to keep going higher. And it forces us to make a decision. And that decision is whether we jump right back in, or whether we hold we keep our powder dry and hold off a little bit so that we can see what happens next. And what that means is that it robs the market of a source of potential demand, because people will buy all day, all week, all month until they have a reason not to. And that massive reaction against the prevailing trend introduces an element of uncertainty, and the market just doesn't like uncertainty. So on this occasion, we saw that the market got almost right back up to test the highs, and the Nasdaq very briefly made a new all-time high. Actually, that's not true. A new 15-year high. And now we're seeing the majority of markets back down testing their respective lows from August. And this is the first area of potential support following what has been an accelerated decline. So there is definitely room for a bounce in here. And that could potentially go all the way back up and test the moving average. But then when you look at these chart patterns, what you're now seeing is that the moving average is not only trading above the price, but that the MA has now turned downwards. And often, when a new bull market is getting started, what you would look at is that you get the breakout, and then that eventually starts to turn the MA to point upwards. And that's pretty good confirmation that on average prices are advancing. But on this occasion, what you have is that the MAs are turning downwards, and on average prices are declining. Well, the momentum shares that were really leading the way last year are now in processes of mean reversion. But breadth had been so narrow already that there are a considerable number of shares that are in fairly well-developed downtrends, and that's particularly the case in the energy sector, where oil prices are now accelerating lower. But I don't want to get onto that right now, but to concentrate still on the major indices, that if in a type 2 topping formation, then the question is whether this is medium term, short term, medium term, or even long term. And there's a lot of loose talk about that this is a replay of 2007-2008, and then we have to ask, how credible is that? Is that purely emotional talk based on the fact that prices have pulled back so very sharply this week and last week? Or is that more indicative of people not wanting to get caught twice and having failed to identify the peak in 2000, that people are now rushing to identify the peak now? Well, we have it's not a short-term top. It's certainly a medium-term top. And we don't yet know how low it's going to go. What we do know is in the short term, we're back in an area of potential support. Then you start looking at the very long-term chart. And then what you can identify is that there's a very long range between about 2000 and 2012. And what we had was an emphatic breakout. The market rallied for 2 years. And in a very consistent manner. And people were converted to the bullish hypothesis, and that contributed to the consistency of the trend. And that's what we expect to happen. When a trend is starting to get going, then a lot of people need convincing. So the price action tends to be choppy, and it gets progressively more consistent as more people are converted to the bullish hypothesis. But when you get a loss of momentum, what does that tell you in terms of the supply and demand? But it can't tell you anything other than the fact that the impetus that was driving the demand story is no longer as powerful as it was, and not least because prices are up 250% from trough to peak on the S&P. Then, if this were a smaller range, is it possible that the market could come back and test the upper side of the range and still be in an overall uptrend? Absolutely, it could. Then you have to start thinking about, well, what are the reasons behind all of this and how much of it is already in the price? Well, certainly there are a number of factors that are driving uncertainty. The pace with which oil prices are declining is accelerating, and oil prices will not go to zero. Well, they've fallen 25 to 30% in this week alone, and WTI is closing out the week at 29.40, and it was down $1.70 in here today, and that's a big move. And you know, that's also indicative of people panicking out of this market. Shorts are being increased. People, the holders are panicking out. And then how much of this bearish news is in the price? Certainly inventories are very high, and the US has just started exporting. And there is a hot war going on between Iran and Saudi Arabia in Syria. And Saudi Arabia is even talking about selling the crown jewels. So, in terms of Saudi Aramco. So, yeah, there's a lot of moving parts in here. And yet, we look at this chart and say that if a massive reaction against the prevailing trend is a type 2 ending characteristic, then an acceleration is a type 1 trending end characteristic, and oil prices are accelerating lower. Then they can't continue to fall $2 a day indefinitely. Then they would be at zero within 10 days. So, you know, we're getting to a point now where this is getting to be a very exaggerated decline. And the shorts and the bears are incredibly vocal. So we know how big their positions are, and their positions are going to be very large indeed. And then the first clear upward dynamic is going to signal a low of at least near-term and potentially even medium-term significance. And we know what this looks like, because the supply surge that hit the natural gas market as a result of unconventional supply has been in evidence for the better part of 6 years. And what we've had has been an incredibly volatile, rangy environment, and with massive trough to peak swings, but at depressed levels overall relative to where prices had been trading in the following Hurricane Katrina in 2005. And I continue to believe, and veteran subscribers will recall from the audio that we've been talking about this for quite some time, that oil prices would probably follow the same trajectory, that unconventional oil and gas is going to get taken out of the market at these low levels, and it will come back into the market at higher levels. And that will put a cap on the ability of demand to overwhelm supply as prices go higher. And that is a formula for a rangy environment overall. Well, then a lot of the uncertainty that we're having right now is in not least in part due to the amount of debt that has been taken out over the last 6 and 7 years. And when we start thinking about the quantity of debt, then covenant-lite loans are at an all-time high. And covenant-lite loans were those loans that people said never again to in 2008, and yet we're now here we are with record issuance. And the ability of and I've posted a memorandum today from Howard Marks at Oaktree, and it's a wonderful piece of behavioral analysis. And as a troubled debt investor, he has a rather interesting perspective on value. So I really would recommend reading that, because I found it very illustrative and highly educational. Well, then looking at the ability of some of these high yield credits to refinance, then yes, they're certainly running into trouble, and some of the more over-leveraged energy plays are going to go bankrupt. And that, and it's hard to imagine that oil prices are going to move higher until we see some form of bankruptcy. And certainly the amount of money that private equity investors have been able to raise to invest in some of these troubled assets has prolonged the oil bear market. But we are quickly approaching a denouement, so then this would be perhaps not the most advantageous place to be increasing a short position, because it's an accelerating downtrend, and we know that there is a finite end. Then, yes, there is geopolitical pressure, and then the ability of OPEC to act as a price setter for the oil market has certainly been challenged in here, and Saudi Arabia and Iran have no great interest in wanting to sit down just now, but it's in their mutual self-interests to come to some form of accommodation. And interesting that Indonesia has offered to act as a neutral arbiter between the two, and as the most populous Muslim country, and a rather moderate president in Widodo, then this that one might not be a bad idea, and would suggest that the room for compromise with Russia beginning to cut back on its supply is perhaps not beyond the bounds of possibility. Then the other major flashpoint is in China, and the Chinese have bungled the regulation of their market. First, opening the options market and telling people that they can go out and buy with absolutely no risk, and then you're creating this bubble type environment, and then pricking it, and people getting their first margin calls and trying to get out of the market, so that the market went up incredibly quickly and came down even more quickly. Then, with this ham-fisted attempt to try and support the market at an artificially high level, then they've made a mess of how they are trying to reweight the relative performance of the renminbi. And what it looks like is that they want to have a rolling peg, and they're trying to hold the value of the renminbi steady against the euro, which is their largest developed trading partner, and depreciated versus the US dollar. And this is turning into a very messy environment indeed. But then a lot of people are pointing out the fact that, yes, the Chinese economy is slowing, and that there is a substantial amount of money leaving the country. And obviously, that's not particularly good news for China. And yet, the stock market is right now at the 3,000 level on the A-share index. And again, that is another area of potential support. But yesterday it was up and today it was down. And what we need is, you know, a fairly impressive upward dynamic to really confirm that demand is coming in this area. And right now, that's what you would need to really indicate that the market isn't going to go lower. Well, there is a wall of money trying to leave the country, and that's not particularly good news for China, but it's good news for everywhere else, because that money has got to go somewhere. And we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. So then that is a wall of liquidity that is going to hit some market, and I don't believe anyone is talking about that right now. Then a lot of people are pointing out that, yes, China is dependent on the economies of the US and Europe for its finished products, but that Europe and the USA and North America are not overly dependent on the Chinese economy. And that's true. But there are plenty of other economies that are highly dependent on China, and not least the commodity producers, but also countries within its hinterland. And then that does raise a potential issue, and it's something that we've talked about previously, and it was actually a delegate at the Chicago Chart Seminar nearly 18 months ago that really crystallized just how important the issue of US dollar-denominated debt within emerging markets is, because the Asia dollar index is now really beginning to accelerate lower, and that is bad news for anyone within any of those countries that have taken out US dollar loans. And that's a particular issue for Latin America and just about all of Latin America, you know, and particularly the energy producers. So Brazil, you know, with Petrobras and $250 billion outstanding, is perhaps the largest weighting in the majority of bond indices, because there's this paradox in the bond market that the biggest credit is generally the most liquid credit and therefore occupies the largest position in terms of weighting in bond indices. But what the net effect of that is that the most indebted issuer is the represents the debt that everybody owns. So what happens with Petrobras is a very big deal, because it's been the political plaything of the gilded class in Brazil for a number of years, and you know, the company is in some serious trouble with prices as low as they are for energy right now. Well, then, you know, Venezuela has been phenomenally badly managed, and then there isn't a great deal of enthusiasm that the new parliament is going to be able to oust the president Maduro. So you know, there is a potential that Venezuela could be a country that goes bust, and those would be catalysts. They would be major catalysts for a turn in the energy sector, and then that does represent the potential for blowback into the European economy or into the North American economy, because we do not yet know exactly who it is that owns these bonds. And if you remember what happened with the Greek crisis, that it really wasn't until well after the event that it became clear exactly who owns the debt. And to my mind, it is the issue of US dollar denominated debt is perhaps the greatest issue that that we have to deal with, because the fall in oil prices is a double-edged sword. It is really bad news for producers and incredibly good news for consumers. But that's not being reflected in prices. With, you know, for example, the Indian rupee moved to a new low in here today. And India is perhaps the most, one of the countries that benefits most from low energy prices. But that's not being reflected right now. What people are afraid of is that the rupee will go down even further, and that will have an impact on stocks, and that any US dollar denominated debt that is evident in the country will be turned into a problem. And yet, for a country like India, that's probably less of a problem than for others, because they had a massive currency devaluation only a couple of years ago, and that wasn't an issue that came out then, so it's unlikely to have been an issue right now. So right now, we're getting this environment where everything is getting tarred with the same brush. And the problems that that people are worried about are causing a lot of different assets to pull back, and because of contagion. And contagion is indiscriminate, because people sell not what they should, but what they must, and or what they can. And that is one of the reasons that you're getting such commonality in the declines across markets. But you know, it's only going, you know, that generally doesn't last very long, because what it throws up is real value. So yes, we are in a very tense environment, and yes, the market has pulled back very sharply, and I think the emotions are running very high, but what it is setting us up for is a really phenomenal buying opportunity. And then we know what we're looking for. We're looking for clear upper dynamics to pressure the shorts. And whether that happens at the current level for the S&P or for the DAX or for the FTSE, or it happens somewhat lower, then those are still open questions. What we know for certain is that this is not the most advantageous time to be selling. That would have been considerably above where we are now. And then the question is whether we get a short covering rally that takes us back up towards the trend mean. And then the question will be whether these lows hold. But we're just not there yet. Now, if we look at this over the long term, then yes, this is enormously traumatic. And it's the first really big pullback that we've had since the S&P broke out. So, is this the first big consolidation in a what has still got the potential to be a secular bull market? Well, yes, is the answer to that question. And you would have to get a much more significant deterioration, that you would have to see the index breaking below 1550. And the fact that that price is so far away from where we are now is a reflection of just how much the market had gone up already. Well, that means that, you know, if we were to see the market pulling back by that extent, we would be set up for just an incredible buying opportunity. And then how likely is that? And I can say honestly, I have no idea how likely that is, but we are in a very taut environment, and things would have to be seen to be getting worse for markets to fall again next week like they fell this week. And that is something that we can monitor, because we can only live with the reality that the market provides us. If we were to take a 2-year view, a 3-year view, a 4-year view, will prices be above in 2 years where they are today? I think that that is almost certain, that we are in an environment where, yes, the Fed has risen interest rates, and they may want to rise interest rates again, but against this background, it's looking unlikely that they're going to be raising interest rates. And what we're looking at is that, you know, bond yields have compressed, you know, fairly rapidly this week, and the 10-year is right back at 2%. Well, again, you would have to have an additional significant deterioration for yields to go much lower than that. So, you know, this is a potential environment where we have we could get some short covering. And by and large, what you're looking at in government bonds is a trend that has type 3 bottoming characteristics in the yield and type 3 top characteristics in the price. And that's after an incredibly long run. Because what we're really only talking about is how long it will take for interest rates to go back up, but not. But it is now a question of if rather than when. And that's an important divergence, because there was a lot of people thought in the last few years that prices are for that interest rates would never go back up. And that's part of the reason that we've had this dislocation since they rose interest rates. And the chart I've posted today, and I posted it again yesterday, was the Atlanta Fed's shadow banking index. And you've had tightening there of 300 basis points since 2014. So that's a lot of tightening for leveraged individuals and leveraged funds. And now that has almost completely changed, closed the arbitrage with the Fed funds rate. And it's hard to imagine that it's going to get any tighter, or it would even go the other way, because why would the shadow banking exist if they could simply go to the Fed, the discount window, and borrow from the Fed directly? So, the tightening and the arbitrage that was there over the last 18 months has now closed. And then the ability of the shadow banking tightening to exert an additional influence on the market is waning as a result. When we look at the commodity complex, then the migration of China away from this infrastructure build and housing boom that has been, the impetus for its economic growth for the last 25, 30 years, is a major influence on the commodity producers, because their demand growth forecasts are not going to be correct, and that's being priced in rapidly. And there's going to be rationalization in this industry. There are going to be mergers, and there are going to be bankruptcies. And until we see that, then it's hard to imagine that you're going to get a major move in prices, because some of the supply simply has to come out of the market. And this is perhaps the most appropriate way of looking at it, is that the cure for high prices is high prices, because it encourages additional supply into the market, and that overwhelms demand, and that's exactly what we've had. And now demand isn't, demand growth forecasts aren't coming in the way that were anticipated to justify that supply move. So, that is why prices have deteriorated like they have, and we're just not there yet in terms of having being able to hang our hats out there and say, yes, absolutely, they've bottomed, because that's not yet the case. But we do know that they have priced in an awful lot of bad news already. And because of all these, because of the issues that have that the mining sector have had to deal with, and the rationalization that has been most pronounced in the gold mining sector, well, gold prices have steadied up, not least because that supply that supply overhang isn't really there in gold prices, and gold has been appreciating in just about every currency except the US dollar for the last year, with commodity-based Asian currencies and the euro and the pound all declining, and now it's appreciating in US dollars. And something that we said on many an occasion during the gold bull market was that gold did best when it was appreciating in all currencies, and that is the case right now. So that doesn't say that it's not volatile, that it was down sharply yesterday and it was up $10 in here today. And what we can say, though, is that volatility within the gold market is actually declining, and particularly relative to Wall Street. And the VIX index closed at its highest level in 4 years in here today. And, that's an indication, that there really is a lot going on in, and actually it's, when I'm looking at this weekly chart, and now that it has actually pulled back toward at the end of the day, so it is not closing at the highest in 4 years. And I'll have to amend my copy, because that wasn't correct. That also helps to suggest that at least some of the shorts were paired towards the close in here. And when you look at gold, then it's not volatile in the same way that it would have been only a few years ago. and that supply and demand are coming back into equilibrium. But that said, it needs to get back above the 200-day moving average. It needs to break the medium-term progression of lower rally highs to really indicate that demand is back in control beyond short-term considerations, and that it is back in the driver's seat over the medium term. And you know, it might well be, but the case is not yet copper fastened, and but yet, you know, it could be, and the lack of volatility is particularly interesting. And you know, when we look at currencies, then you know the market is betting that the U.S. dollar, the interest rate differentials between the U.S. dollar and everything else are not going to widen out the same way it was looking like only 3 or 4 months ago. So the dollar was stronger against just about everything in here today, but not the euro. And you know, that's people betting that the pace of interest rate rises that the Fed was forecasting rather rashly with I think was it Stan Fisher just last week saying that he thought there was going to be 4 interest rate hikes this year, and the bond market is clearly at odds with that decision. And realistically, would it be possible for the Fed to be raising interest rates when there is such economic difficulty being experienced just about everywhere else? Because the Fed does not want the dollar to be that strong, because the dollar would soar to the moon if the Fed were to raise interest rates 4 times this year. And what the market is telling us is that that's looking increasingly unlikely. And if that's the case, then the euro can rally from here, and it's at a reasonably depressed level. Well, one of the things that people are worried about justifiably is that the banking sector is underperforming. And, you know, we keep a close eye on the banking sector for the simple reason that banks are liquidity providers, and a bull market thrives on liquidity. And it's not just US banks or UK banks, but it's just about all banks are pulling back right now. And, you know, part of the reason for that is because of the onerous weight of additional regulation, and particularly for international banks, because they're subject to regulation in so many different jurisdictions. And, you know, that's leading to, you know, banks selling off parts of their businesses and, you know, and breaking up. And then the question has to be asked is, how beneficial is that for the provision of liquidity? And you got to answer that it's not particularly beneficial, and you know, then that's not particularly good news. Well, you know, it wouldn't be the Friday audio if we weren't to talk about, you know, what's really important, because a lot of what's going on is very short-term oriented. And yes, we have medium-term top formations, but you have to keep in mind, you know, where we are in terms of the long-term cycle. And low energy prices are an incredible enabler for economic growth, because it's the removal of a tax on expansion. And technological innovation is accelerating at just an incredible rate, and that's unlikely, very unlikely, to be in any way negatively influenced by volatility on the stock market. And you know, what we are now seeing is that so many emerging market currencies, and particularly those of the high population areas, are experiencing currency weakness. And you know, once those currencies stabilize, then that's going to have a transformative effect on their relative competitiveness, which will help to ignite economic growth. So when you start to look through a lot of what people are worried about, then the underpinnings for a secular bull market are still, you know, very evident. And you know, if you were actually looking for clues, then you know, take a look at Indonesia, where the stock market hasn't really gone anywhere at all. The currency is being supported by the central bank, and it is not making new lows. You know, whereas you know the Taiwan dollar, the Korean won, the Philippine peso, they're all making new lows. The Indonesian rupiah isn't, and that's something that is worth highlighting. And then there are a number of countries where there's no leverage at all because they've been locked out of the international markets for some time. And Argentina is certainly one of those. And, you know, Mauricio Macri, you know, he held true to his word. And one of the first things that he did when he came into office was to adjust the peso to close that that level, or that divergence between the official rate and the blue rate. And you know, that's a sign of improving governance, and it's something that is probably worth keeping an eye on for the rest of this year. And I think with that, I will leave you for the weekend and wish all the best to all of you.